Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI appeals for peace, reiterating that violence cannot be considered a solution to problems. December the 1st is the day we observe World AIDS Day, and we hear that although around 95% of people with HIV/AIDS live in developing nations, HIV today is a threat to men, women and children on all continents around the world. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday encouraged the faithful to be meek and loving, so as to build a society where violence will not be considered the solution to problems. The Pope made this appeal after praying the Angelus with crowds gathered in St. Peter's Square. He turned his attention to two separate tragedies, one in Mumbai, India, where a 60-hour terrorist attack resulted in the death of at least 174 people, and another in Jos, Nigeria, where a disputed election brought fighting between Muslims and Christians and the death of as many as 400 people. Chris Altieri reports.
Vorrei invitarvi a unirvi nella preghiera per le numerose vittime sia dei brutali attacchi terroristici di Mumbai in India, sia degli scontri scoppiati a Jos in Nigeria.
Pope Benedict XVI called on all the faithful to pray for the victims of terrorism in Mumbai, India, and the victims of a deadly outbreak of violence in the central Nigerian city of Jos. Nearly 200 people were killed in coordinated terrorist attacks, and the more than 60 hours of fighting that followed them in Mumbai last week, for which a group calling itself the Deccan Mujahideen took responsibility. While clashes between Muslim and Christian gangs in the central Nigerian city of Jos left around 400 people dead. The Archbishop of Abuja, Nigeria, Cardinal John Onaiyekan, told us the ringleaders of the unrest in Jos have political motives.
The situation that we are seeing on the news media in Nigeria, especially in Jos, is indeed very unfortunate. Very unfortunate because we felt we were already making great progress, especially the leaders of religion and government in that zone of Nigeria. It is important to go to the truth of the matter. It will not be helpful to simply take facile position and simply say Christians and Muslims are fighting. After all, we know that the origin of all this is political. The result or non-result of an election. And the politicians always find ways to manipulate religion when it suits them. And this is what is happening now.
In India, in the wake of the Mumbai violence, the country's top security official, the Home Minister Shivraj Patil, resigned Sunday as the government struggled under growing accusations of security failures following the terror attacks. The spokesman for the Catholic Bishops' Conference of India, Father Babu Joseph, told us the church is helping civil authorities and all those who have been affected by the violence in Mumbai, which is India's largest center of commerce and a popular international tourist destination.
The Cardinal has asked to keep all our church health services ready for them, and also the army personnel are staying here for 3 and 4 days next to the church over here. We have given them place and shelter to park over here and even given them food and help. We also want to start, in case they are colluded with elements from India, we want to start peace committees. I think we should do much more in trying to educate people about the sacredness of life, because there is a certain callousness to life. They are being desensitized to life. They have seen so much of crime, so much of violence, so much of death, that the youngsters seem to have lost the sense of the sacredness of life.
In remarks delivered after the Sunday Angelus prayer, the Pope said the causes and circumstances of these tragic events are different, but our horror and the condemnation of such cruel and senseless violence must be one and the same. The Pope asked God to touch the hearts of deluded people who think violence is the way to resolve local or international problems. During his Angelus remarks, the Pope also spoke words of greeting to the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, His Holiness Bartholomew I, on occasion of the feast of St. Andrew the Apostle, St. Peter's brother, and the patron of the Church at Constantinople.
Sant'Andrea è patrono del Patriarcato di Costantinopoli.
Pope Benedict said, the Church of Rome feels closely connected to that of Constantinople by a tie of special fraternity. In keeping with tradition, a Vatican delegation led by the president of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, Cardinal Walter Kasper, is in Istanbul this weekend to celebrate the feast with the Ecumenical Patriarch. Pope Benedict sent greetings and best wishes to the Patriarch and to all the Christian faithful there, invoking upon all of them an abundance of blessing.
Di tutto cuore rivolgo il mio saluto e il mio augurio.
This Sunday was also the first Sunday of Advent, and Pope Benedict spoke about the season during his English language remarks, following the traditional prayer of Marian devotion. Remarks in which the Pope also greeted the participants in a youth conference at the European University of Rome.
Today is the first Sunday of Advent. The Church begins a new liturgical year. The Gospel invites to be prepared as faithful servants for the coming of Christ. May Advent be a time of preparation that leads us to a life centered on our Christian hope.
I'm Chris Altieri.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. Started on the 1st of December 1988, World AIDS Day is about raising money, increasing awareness, fighting prejudice, and improving education. World AIDS Day is important in reminding people that HIV has not gone away and that there are many things still to be done. To start with, I called up the international development charity Christian Aid and spoke to their chief HIV officer, Rachel Bagley, who began by giving me figures and estimates regarding the spread of AIDS across the globe.
Well, at the moment, there are an estimated 33 million people who are living with HIV. And HIV is an infection that's very closely associated with poverty. So unfortunately, the majority of these people with HIV are living in poor countries. About 67% are living in sub-Saharan Africa. And about 95% of people with HIV live in poor countries.
I remember very well when, let's say, public awareness broke out in the 1980s and everybody started talking about AIDS. In these past 20 years, things have obviously changed, but so has the view of the public. We don't talk about it anymore. Why is that?
That's absolutely true. I think it's very interesting. We did some work recently in the UK with young people, and young people nowadays have absolutely no idea about HIV. It's not taught in schools, it's not on the media. And I think the reason for that is it's very much become a rich-poor divide. In rich countries, HIV is a very much a manageable condition. It's very much like diabetes or high blood pressure. If you have it, you can take treatment. So there's no need to worry about it, people think. And in poor countries, where the majority of people live with HIV, people continue to die, but it's very much seen as an infection of poor people. So there is this big divide, and certainly, as I say, in the UK, people will think of it as an infection that's very much associated with Africa. Still, some people do associate it with drug use and gay men, but it's gone out of the media's attention. People are bored with it. People have a very short attention span. And so other things, you know, whether it be avian flu or climate change, these kind of, or now, of course, the credit crunch, these things take up media attention. And HIV, because it's an old story, even though it's really only been identified for about 25 years.
But it does affect the rich countries. I mean, even if it is out of media interest, what would you like to say to people, to young people, especially in rich countries? It's not just like diabetes, is it?
It's treatable and manageable. But in the same way as diabetes, you don't want to be taking medicines for the rest of your life. Medicines have side effects. You have to be extremely, with HIV, with the treatment, you have to be extremely careful about taking it. You have to take it every single day for the rest of your life. If you don't take it, you can develop resistance to the drugs. And if you develop resistance to the drugs, they stop working. So although it is treatable and manageable, it's something you definitely want to avoid. And I think we do have to start talking to young people. And in the UK and other countries across Europe, heterosexual transmission, that's transmission between men and women, is rising. It's no longer very much confined to gay men and people who inject drugs.
Rachel, just let's be clear with this. You say it's treatable, but it's not curable, is it?
Yes, absolutely not. And it just like diabetes, you know, once it, with diabetes, once you stop taking the insulin, you become extremely unwell. If you run out of insulin, you die. The same with antiretrovirals. Antiretroviral drugs, the drugs that treat HIV, stop the HIV virus from replicating, so that they can control the amount of virus you've got in your blood. And they stop the progression to AIDS. However, once you stop taking them, even, you know, for a couple of days, the virus will reemerge and rapidly replicate in the blood. So if you stop taking the drugs, you will progress along to becoming, having symptoms and eventually get infections that will most likely kill you.
Rachel, what about the stigma that was attached? Has that changed socially?
Well, absolute tragedy of the situation. Everywhere I go, and Christian Aid works in has HIV projects in about 40 countries. Stigma and discrimination remain a massive problem. In some countries made progress. Some countries like Zambia have made huge progress and are much more open about HIV. But still, there's a huge amount of stigma and discrimination. And for me, this is why it's so important, and we're having this campaign at Christian Aid to try and get faith leaders to talk about HIV. Because of this historic kind of link between morality and HIV, faith leaders have often actually perpetuated the stigma. And if they can speak out and challenge the stigma and condemn stigma, give people with HIV a much more empowering voice within churches and mosques, this could have a huge, huge benefit in overturning stigma and discrimination.
Now, as you were mentioning, the theme actually this year has to do with leadership, and especially the leadership of church leaders. Can you tell me a little bit more about this?
What's happened over the past 25 years is there have been a few notable high-profile people who've spoken out about the need to address HIV, like Bill Clinton, and more recently, but only very relatively recently, Nelson Mandela. But in general, leadership has been very silent. And there have been a great movement of grassroots activists, very brave people in countries with HIV who've very much led the movement towards making treatment more available. But there hasn't been that leadership. And UNAIDS and WHO and the people who lead the campaign on HIV have really stressed the importance to involve leadership. And we at Christian Aid think that the church has an absolutely pivotal role to play in this leadership.
I asked Rachel if there was something special she wanted to say on this World AIDS Day 2008.
I would like the message that we're saying from Christian Aid is, please, all faith leaders, talk about HIV, challenge stigma and discrimination. And everyone else, talk to young people. HIV is an infectious, sexually transmitted infection. We must be practical about it. So parents, siblings, talk to young people about HIV. Bring it out into the open. And don't perpetuate the stigma and discrimination that is so pernicious and really does prevent an effective response to HIV.
And staying with the theme of leadership on this World AIDS Day, Father Bob Vitillo, the AIDS expert with Caritas Internationalis, the Catholic Church's aid and development agency, says the Catholic Church has in fact taken strong leadership in this area, achieving many results.
Well, first of all, I think we have to be proud of, in a very positive way, the work of the church in this area, the leadership that the church has taken in many, many parts of the world, both in teaching people about HIV and AIDS, especially on the basis of our Christian values, and then also in the service that the church has done, and also in helping to provide pastoral and spiritual care to people. I think we need to take a lot more leadership in counteracting the stigma and discrimination that still exists in many parts of the world. I'm shocked as I travel, especially to those areas of the world that have a very heavy impact of HIV already. For example, in Southern Africa, that some people still are afraid to be tested for HIV because they don't want to know that they are positive. And even if they are positive, then they're afraid to present themselves for medications, which could prolong their lives because of the stigma that exists in the local communities. And then in those parts of the world where HIV is a newer phenomenon, for example, in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, you still have a great deal of stigma and discrimination. So I think it's important for the church to speak out clearly that is not an appropriate Christian response.
And what about us? Here in Italy, some 4,000 people are infected by the HIV virus every year. And yet it's a problem that is far from the attention of the media, as most people, it appears, consider it someone else's problem, someone who lives in Africa, Asia, or maybe in Eastern Europe. I did some investigating and discovered an association called Arche, with headquarters in Rome, Milan and Florence. The association, made up mainly of volunteers, aims to help and support children and young people who are HIV positive. I spoke to Luca Ghiurghi, who is in charge of communication and fundraising here at Arche's Rome office.
Arche was born in 1989. We started in Milan, where there were some kids left alone in the hospital. These kids were HIV positive. And they were left alone because at that time there were a lot of fear and ignorance regarding this disease. And so we replied to a request of playing with this child left alone. And then from there we started doing more complex things, but we still stay in the hospitals and we still follow children and youth because now with the new therapies they grow and so they pose different and more complex requests and problems to us.
Luca told me that although the focus of Arche is on children and youth, help invariably extends to the families too, in those cases, in those rare cases in which the family is actually present. Who exactly are these children? I asked him.
Most of them are Italians, born in Italy by an Italian mother and father. It's difficult to say, but I mean, around a little less of 1,000 youth that are infected with HIV in Italy. Most of them are around big cities in the poorest area, say Milan, Rome, Naples, Turin, where there are the most difficult situations. Areas where there are many other problems, not only HIV, it's not only a medical problem. Most of the time it's linked with many other special social and economic and integration problems.
Luca pointed out that thanks to the therapies that are available today, it is indeed very rare for an Italian child to be infected whilst in the womb or during birth.
So most of the children that we follow now, the smallest one, come here in Italy from abroad already born with HIV.
And also, you were saying earlier, you were speaking about the youth, so there are children who have grown up with this disease. What kind of support do you give them?
We born as an association in 1989, so most of them we followed since when they were very small. Mm-hmm. And they survived. They don't even know how, because at that time they didn't have any cure for the HIV. So they have a point of view of their life, very, very, very difficult to understand. They didn't have any idea of their future because they were waiting to their death. Most of their friends died. Probably one or both the parents died with HIV. So it's difficult for us to help them to build their future. Because now with the new therapies, they have the same possibility to reach a certain age as anyone else.
Except they have not lived the same life conditions as anyone else. And they continue to undergo continuous hospital checkups and treatment, not to mention their daily ration of medicine and all the side effects they bear.
But still, they have to build their future, and especially where you are in an age between 16 and 17, these youth are in a borderline. They can easily fall in a destructive attitude because they don't take care so much of their life. Especially because also they come from very difficult environment in terms of social environment. So when we have the possibility to have one of these that follow studies or find a job, it's a big success.
With small children, it's relatively easy, Luca says. What they need is someone to play and learn with. An adolescent has a whole host of pressing problems.
Most of the time, the real needs and problems come from exclusion, ignorance, and especially fear of showing others their disease. This is one of the worst and most difficult things they face.
So you're saying that in 2008, there's still a stigma attached to AIDS?
Definitely. We make a small part to face this stigma. We go in the schools, we go in class where at the age of 12 or 13 to talk about stigma, to talk about what does it mean to be HIV positive and how it's transmitted. We bring with us a doctor from the hospital who explains the technicalities, and then we make the children work to understand what does it mean to be excluded. To make them think which is the real risk and which is the risk they perceive based on ignorance or fear, which are not really based on real risks.
So, it's marginalization, the difficulty or impossibility of setting up a relationship with a girl or with a boy when they reach their teens, a sentiment of unease in every single contact they have, including something as simple as a football game, the dreadful feeling that at all times a barrier exists between them and the others.
They always perceive that there is something between them and the others, which is this not said, very important for them, that is the disease, that in a way limits the possibility to talk and to share emotions and to share important things in their life. That's one of the heaviest things they bring with them. Because they have fear, because they experienced exclusions.
In your experience, does a child or a young person who is HIV positive say so to his peers, to his friends, or do they keep it to themselves?
This is one of the most difficult things to say. We start with families, which is because especially the saying to a child, a parent or a grandmother saying you are HIV positive, it's already a big step. And then we follow this process. We help the parents and the children in this process of, say, revelation of the disease, which is always a shocking thing. And then they have this big information and they don't know what to do with this, and most of the time they keep it for them because they know that if they go around saying a thing like this, they will be excluded or they will have very difficult problems afterwards.
So what you're saying is that the scene has changed medically enormously, in the sense that the therapies that you were speaking about give people with HIV the possibility to lead a normal life and, you know, a long life. But socially, things haven't changed that much.
No, definitely no, I think. I think it's definitely the same, or I would say probably worse. Worse in terms, it seems that there isn't anymore any problem with HIV. In fact, we know that between adults, there are a lot of infections that in some cases are really even growing because we're not talking about this. So a lot of people think that it's something that they don't have to take care of. And so having kind of removed the problem, we have removed the problem from our mind, but the virus is already there, it's growing, and people are getting infected. So this is causing also for the people that lives with HIV, the impression that they have been removed, because it's no one talks about their problem. They feel they have a big problem. They feel, in a way, dangerous for the others if they don't know. So they feel a lot of responsibility and no help from the institutions.
I'm very struck by this because, as I was saying earlier, I was very aware of the AIDS virus when it became public in the 80s and 90s. Everybody spoke about it. There were campaigns. And today, nothing. But as you're saying, the virus is still there. So why? What's happened and what must be done?
We talk about HIV every year. One day here, the 1st of December. But most of the time we talk about how it's a dramatic thing what happens in Africa, in Asia, in Eastern Europe, because they have millions of people infected. But from here in Italy, we have also to think that it's not something that is somewhere else. It's something that it's also here in Italy. It's between people that are not in the famous categories that are at risk. What must be done probably must be rethinking new communication on this. Because, as I said, today it's very stupid to be infected with HIV. But it's so, I would say it's so easy. But it's easy because many people don't think it's a problem. There is a problem. Don't think without thinking and without having respect of the other and of himself.
As you say, we speak about AIDS once a year on the 1st of December. We'll try and do that more often. But 1st of December is here. What would you like to say this year?
This year, I will follow what the UN project is. We have to keep the promise. But we keep the promise means that we promised some years ago that at country level, international level, that we'll face with more energy the HIV problem. In Africa, definitely, which is a pandemic disease. So at a very different level. But we have to continue to fight against this disease, because otherwise we'll remain underground, uncovered, but always there.
What we want here at Arche, Luca said, is to see our children grow. We want to have to look around and say, nobody needs us anymore. Because these are children who can go to work, who can one day have families, who can lead normal lives.
Nothing special.
Can a person with HIV have children? Yes, a woman can have children without HIV. And a man?
Yes, also there are some technicalities. But, I'm not an expert, but there are some techniques that can help them to have a normal family. So why not?
That's all from the English feature program today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow. So join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.